This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
Welcome to our regular sports show, Game of Two Halves, every Monday live on Money FM 89.3 at 5:15 p.m., where I host the sports podcasters from The Straits Times. I'm Howie Lim, and I'm joined today by Straits Times Assistant Sports Editor Rohit Brijnath and sports correspondent Sazali Abdulaziz to talk about the weekend's English Premier League action and sports elsewhere as well. Hello, both.
Hey, Howie. Good to be here.
So that big EPL match over the weekend, defending champions Liverpool visited contenders Chelsea, beat the Londoners 2-0. Sazali, given that Chelsea played with only 10 men for half of the game, what should fans read into this result?
Not very much, honestly. you couldn't really tell too much. The red card for Andreas Christensen just before halftime killed the game as a contest. Although it was obviously the correct decision, but I think even in the first half, you could see there was a bit of naivety, you know, in Chelsea's backline. You know, together with the goalkeeper Kepa Arrizabalaga, they never looked comfortable playing out from the back with short passes, even though they kept trying to the whole game. And as a unit, as a trio, they looked like an accident waiting to happen. So, you know, simply put, I don't think Kepa, Christensen and Kurt Zouma are title-winning, you know, backbone for a team. One other thing from the game that I wanted to bring up, and I know Rohit might be amused by this because it adds to the legend that is Jurgen Klopp, was how Klopp reacted to the red card. You know, one of his staff members behind him had apparently cheered the sending off, and he angrily turned back and shouted, "Are you crazy? We never do that. Okay, we never celebrate such a thing." And he didn't really want to, he was asked about it in the press conference later. He didn't really want to go into detail, but he confirmed this really did happen, and he didn't like seeing it from his team. So, you know, I think it's another example of why he's such a breath of fresh air, you know, a neutral's favorite almost.
It sends such a strong message, I think. You know, it just sends a message to everybody, and he's doing it out there on the field. You can't dispute it. He's upset about it. And I'm happy. I'm always happy when sport sends out that type of message. And when a coach or a manager, you know, speaks out about something which is actually in bad taste. I mean, I love Klopp. So, I mean, this, as he says, this just adds to his legend for me. Mm-hmm.
So both teams also grabbed headlines for their acquisitions this summer. Chelsea, as we've discussed before, spent over 220 million euros, while Liverpool last week announced the signings of Thiago Alcantara and Diogo Jota for a combined 75 million euros. Are you surprised by the spending, given clubs were expected to tighten their belts during the COVID-19 pandemic?
I was, and this was especially so when, you know, early on in the pandemic, I think before June, you know, clubs were saying, even Premier League clubs were saying they might, you know, be out of business, you know, that kind of thing, which I felt was a bit ludicrous. And you know, later on, you had clubs following or retrenching staff. And I think the most jarring example of this was when Arsenal announced in early August that they were going to make 55 non-playing staff redundant. Mm. And then literally a week later, they signed Willian, who was a free agent, the former Chelsea player, for £220,000 per week, and on a £10 million signing on fee, which is ridiculous because the 55 sackings, you know, the club said in a statement, would have helped them save £2.5 million, just a quarter of the signing on fee. So, to me, that's a huge disconnect about how a club is run, because you are sacking, you know, 55 people with 55 families, and then, you know, a week later you bring in a player on ridiculous money. You are sacking players because you say you don't have money, and then you spend ridiculous sums of money. So to me, that just completely doesn't make sense. I couldn't comprehend it at all.
I mean, you know, the thing is, if you keep calling yourself the people's game, then you better think of the people. And I think you have to think of the smaller people in the clubs, the guys with the small jobs. I mean, that's the humanity of this game. And one of the things football has to realize is, look, if you look around the world, whether it's the Black Lives Matter movement, which athletes are involved in, and so many things that athletes are standing up for, standing up against sexism, standing up against racism, making very principled stances, you know. And I think that's the greatest thing that has happened in sport for me over the past year and a half, that these athletes, for example, Osaka at the US Open, wearing those masks. And so I think that, you know, football, when it does things like this, for me, it just looks like a sport out of touch. You know, it's just got no principle to it. And that, as I think Sazali used a word that I like a lot, disconnect. I think it just seemed like a disconnected thing to do. It's back to something I think we're going to keep talking about today, is, you know, winning, 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 winning. But I think human beings are a little bit more important than winning.
Yeah, and the other thing is, like Rohit rightly mentioned about players using their platform to take a stand, to send a message. And the players in the EPL were dithering so much before they decided to band together to say, okay, we want to have wage cuts to sort of save our club's money. And I mean, realistically, and of course, everybody can say, oh, you know, how would you feel if you earn £50,000, but then you are asked to just give away half of that, which obviously is going to be a hit to the players. But as Rohit said, you have to think of the smaller people. Mm. Yeah, you might be sad that, oh, I only have 25k instead of 50k. But what about the person who does not even have £5,000? You know what I mean? So they have to really, really sort of take it into perspective and realize that, you know, they're in a really privileged position and that sacrifices have to be made in tough times.
Yeah, one small thing. I mean, I think is that, you know, everybody in sport always talks about the team. You know, we are here for the team. The team in football, or in any club, does not extend to the people who play. It also extends to the guys who maybe clean the dressing room, who clean the boots, who put out the kit, who do the laundry. All those guys, that's also part of your team. And I think those guys should not be forgotten.
And as we continue to talk about money, though, Tottenham Hotspur also pulled off a transfer coup by re-signing Gareth Bale from Real Madrid. What kind of effect do you think, though, he'll have on Jose Mourinho's side, Saz?
Yeah, I think it'll be a huge boost. He left Spurs 8 years ago for Real Madrid and he's become a serial winner. I've seen that phrase a lot in articles and on social media. He's a serial winner. He's won 2 league titles and 4 Champions League trophies with Real Madrid. And he will not bring just quality, but like I said, that winning mentality to Spurs. Spurs have sort of hovered outside the top 2 or 3 of the EPL for the last few seasons. And this could be the catalyst they need to build towards, you know, having a strong season this season and maybe even challenge for the title next term. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Gareth Bale, you know, finally in regular action again, hopefully this season.
And in one of the biggest upsets of the season so far, Man U were humbled 3-1 at home by Crystal Palace. Were the Red Devils as woeful as the score suggested, you think?
They were awful. They were terrible. Poor defensively, one-dimensional going forward. There's no sugarcoating it. It was really bad, you know. And actually, a bit like Spurs in their first game of the season last week when they lost to Everton. Except I would say Everton were a much better team than Crystal Palace were against United. And although you see, like I said, you know, Spurs this week bounced back. They scored 5, they won. So I don't think United fans should be pressing the panic button just yet. It might just be a case of them starting the season a bit cold, a bit slow. Crystal Palace have had 2 more competitive games and 3 more friendlies under their belts. But there is some concern over the Manchester United defence. They look really, really weak and soft against, you know, what is honestly a pretty average Crystal Palace attack. So that's something for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to address, I think, in the coming weeks if they want to have a successful season.
All right, halftime. If you like the Straits Times Game of Two Halves podcast, you can listen live on Money FM 89.3 from 5:15 p.m. every Monday, or you can subscribe to hashtag Game of Two Halves on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify, and like us and give us a rating. On to the second half of the show, and early on Monday morning in golf, Bryson DeChambeau won the first major title of his career when he won the US Open. Rohit, this 27-year-old, he's impressed you, hasn't he? As many observers have been impressed as well in the US Open.
So I think that, you know, Ian Poulter's probably said it best, that he tweeted that DeChambeau is not everyone's cup of tea. He isn't my cup of tea, but what he is a major champion, and I have huge respect for him for winning the US Open. DeChambeau is a really unusual guy. I enjoy watching him because he's unusual. I think all sports need characters. So he's a character. He's wearing this Ben Hogan cap. He's sort of, all his shafts of his iron are the same length, which never happens in golf. So all his clubs have the same swing plane. He's very involved. He's a lot of looked at like a mad scientist, like an engineer.
And he's really beefed up, right? During lockdown, he beefed himself up. Looks like a wrestler.
So that's one of the things he just decided. He said, I need to get longer, right? And he has got longer. I was just looking at his stats that in 2019, his average driving distance was 302 yards. And now it's 325. So that's a fair amount of distance to pick up. And he's done it because he's gone from 190 pounds to 240 pounds. And he's done it by has 7 protein shakes a day. And he eats steaks and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And he's looking to go to 270 pounds. So that says, so one story says. But what he's trying to do basically is overpower the course. And it's interesting because it worked for him, certainly here, on a very difficult course. Because even when he gets into the rough, he's got the strength to gouge himself out of the rough. And he's close enough to the green to get on it. And so I think he missed a decent amount of fairways, but he still won the Open. Played actually really composed golf.
240 pounds, Rohit. That's literally the size of a UFC heavyweight, which is saying something. And and I think for casual observers of golf like myself, I think there's this misconception that golfers are built like the average man on the street. You don't really equate them with being a physical specimen like, you know, we mentioned MMA fighter or you know, even athletes in the NBA or NFL or even professional football. But in many cases, I've looked it up, many of the world's top players are stronger and bigger built than maybe players from the eras gone by.
I think that I wouldn't necessarily say bigger, but I, well, of course, now what DeChambeau is going to set off, I don't know. But I think what Tiger Woods did, and I think he was the catalyst in this, is that he made golfers fitter. That he used to lift weights and he used to, you know, bench press a massive amount of iron. And I think he showed that there's a value in being stronger. Obviously, you know, so it's a better diet and all those things. I think all sports have become more professional and golf has gone that way. You look like guys like Rory. Rory is really strong, really fit. So the guys are stronger and they're fitter. DeChambeau, of course, has just gone, taken it to a totally different level. And it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next 4 or 5 years, whether other golfers go that way. Though often the slimmest guys can have, you know, hit the longest or whatever, because, you know, it's to do with swing mechanics and swing speed and all those things. And not just, you can't just muscle a ball down the fairway. Well, evidently you can, but not the cases.
It's certainly not a case of you know, like you said, it's really much more professional now. It's not a case of, you know, them just sitting in the country club with you know, whiskey in hand, that kind of thing. So a lot of science goes into it and a lot of physical fitness goes into it.
Absolutely. A lot of them, you know, they train hard, they play a lot, they travel a lot. It just helps to be fit.
And you're also fascinated by runner-up Matthew Wolf, aren't you? Talk to us about him, Rohit.
So Matthew Wolf, I think, is a really good guy for amateurs because Matthew Wolf was very young, he's 21 years old, has a seriously weird swing. So one of the nicest things about amateur athletes is we think we look good, but nobody ever videos us, so we never know how bad we look. Right. But the fact is that most of us have really odd swings. But the fact is then you see a guy like Matthew Wolf and you're reassured because I think golf is a very textbook heavy game that, you know, you got to do this and there are so many coaches and little fiddles and mechanics and swing planes and all sort of things. I think it goes too far. It's important to find a guy like Wolf because it tells you not everybody comes out of a textbook and that you can find your way around a course and be a really good player even if you have an unusual swing, as long as you can repeat it. I think the key to guys like Wolf, who has an odd swing, he obviously repeats it. You know, so he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows his swing, however strange it may look to other people. And it's nice, I think, for amateurs because I'm pretty sure I've never seen my own swing. I don't want to see it, but I'm presuming it's pretty odd, but it works for me. So,
but it's interesting, Rohit mentioned. Sometimes people judge based on how, you know, strange or exotic it looks. I'm reminded of a scene in Moneyball, the movie. You know, obviously I love the movie Moneyball, and one of the players the Oakland A's signed was Chad Bradford. You know, he's a pitcher, and yeah, apparently one of the most undervalued players at the time in baseball. And his defect, the line in the movie is, his defect is that he throws funny. He has this weird way of throwing where he goes underarm and his body is contorted in a huge in a very strange way, but he's effective, you know. So, you know, if you can play Major League Baseball, you know, while throwing funny, you know, who cares, right? You know, it's effective. So it's always interesting to see people being able to compete at you know, such a high level by doing something that, like as Rohit says, not from the textbook.
Saz, your point is right. I think that there are too many judgments made on athletes in different sports according to technique. But you can be defective and effective. So we shouldn't have generalizations about athletes just because they have a particular oddity about them. You know, there's got to be room. There's a cricketer in India, his name is Jasprit Bumrah, who has a really strange bowling action, but he is probably one of the best fast bowlers in the world. And I think it gives a lot of confidence to young people everywhere who do not necessarily have textbook actions, but still feel, hey, I can make it because look at these guys.
And as long as you don't break the rules, who cares?
Yeah.
All right. So over the weekend, we also learned about a selfless act of sportsmanship where Spanish triathlete Diego Mentrida allowed British rival James Teagle to cross the line ahead of him at the Santander Triathlon and claimed third place after he'd noticed that Teagle had taken a wrong turn on the course. Always nice to hear about such things, right?
I mean, for me, it's just by far the best story of the weekend. You know, I think we are consumed, and naturally so, in sport by winning, winning, winning. But when somebody does something like this, just reminds me on the other side of sport. And I think the important parts of sport and the many ingredients of sport. So basically, you know, I've looked at the film many times because it's a lovely piece of film to watch of you know, Teagle obviously misread the signs. Maybe they were in Spanish or whatever, and he went the wrong way. And then he ran into the barriers. And because he ran into the barriers, and by the time he turned around, Mitrida basically came into third place. And then he realized what had happened, that Teagle was actually, should have been ahead of him, and then made a mistake. So he stopped and he let Teagle pass him in. The thing is this, that we are all hardwired to believe that winning is everything. And at this moment, at the end of the race, for another human being, an athlete, a professional athlete, to go against that grain, that is, in my view, an remarkable thing to do, and something that I'm glad we're talking about, something all kids should see. Because there's always, people would say, oh, there's a cost, you know, obviously he's going to lose a little bit of prize money. Eventually the organizers gave him the equivalent of the third place prize money. But at that time, you're not thinking of that. You're going to lose prize money. You're going to lose a position. You might lose points. God knows what all you're going to lose. But yet this guy is able to find within the capacity to do something decent. And then says later, which I thought was the most beautiful thing, he said, in my opinion, it was in Spanish and it was translated, he said, in my opinion, this is considered a normal situation, that he did not think what he did was a big deal at all, that that is what he had been taught by his parents and his coaches to do, that that's the way you play sport. And I think those are the things that we should spread. You know, it's like the Klopp incident about the red card, you know, saying that we don't behave like that. I think these things are really important things, because without them, sport really, for me, has no value. Then it's just like a business, winning and losing, and it's not different from any other part of life. This gives, for me, character.
For me, I'm obviously it's a wholesome moment, and I think Mitrida did the right thing. But I'm just thinking about it. It's a bit strange in a sense, because some people will look at this and say, okay, the British athlete, you know, he made a mistake. And mistakes happen, and it's part of the game. For example, in football, would you stop playing if a defender who's backing off you slipped? You know, obviously he didn't mean to slip, and suddenly he's at a disadvantage. But, you know, do you stop playing? No. 10 times out of 10, players would run past. So, you know, you take advantage. You seize the opportunity. So I think that there is a line, that there is a bit of a gray area between, you know, seizing opportunity when you know, mistakes happen in games, because it's part of games and it's part of sport. But also, you know, in this particular case, obviously, it's quite clear, you know, Mitrida was trailing him, and they were literally at the end already. He sort of, as he said, you know, I think he also said, you know, he deserved it, you know. So for him, it was an easy decision. But yeah, I think there's a bit of a gray area.
Saz, I think, yes, of course. I mean, people slip, you know, during football, and they let in a goal, and that's a natural course of things, and that's okay. I mean, you don't, that's just, that happens during tennis, or it can be, you know, all sorts of things. You know, your racket guts break when you are going to hit a volley, put it in the net, all sorts of things happen. But yeah, I think this guy probably sensed that he had misread the signs in Spanish of which direction to go. And it's a slightly different thing from slipping in football.
I mean, this is quite clear.
It's not in the normal course of things or whatever. I mean, it is still Teagle's fault. I mean, for going the wrong way, if you want to put it that way. But it's nice. I mean, it's just, yeah. I mean, we shouldn't qualify an act of decency. We should just enjoy it for what it is.
And there goes the final whistle for our sports discussion of the week. We hope you enjoyed listening to us. Follow Straits Times Game of Two Halves podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Thanks for listening. Thank you to Rohit and Sazali as well. Stay safe, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Howie. Glad to be on.
That was an SBH podcast by The Straits Times. Find us on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts, or streaming on Google Home. Do feedback to us at podcast@sbh.com.sg.
You can also check out more podcasts on various topics at The Straits Times, The Business Times, and Money FM 89.3.